I think it is. Yeah. Okay, so what we want to do today is talk about grace. It's another word study. I always get sort of inspired to do these word studies after we get into a discussion on something. And this particular word study was inspired by our Bible study last week. There again, we were able to have a quite extended Bible study there in Homer, Alaska last week. We started at 10 o'clock in the morning and went till about 10 o'clock that night. And it was not anywhere near sundown, so we didn't figure any reason to stop. You get up that part of the country and it is hard to go to sleep because it is daylight almost all the time. Especially when we went up to the Arctic Circle, the sun never went down. So it's really, really difficult. So people just go on and on and on. Mark used to talk to me about their Bible studies, and he says, yeah, we stopped about 10 or 11 o'clock. And I'd say, 10 or 11 o'clock? Well, I can understand it now, because it's just daylight. It's just broad daylight. So anyway, we started talking about grace, or we were talking about a number of things, but we kept coming back to this discussion of grace. And we had a sort of a mixed group there, not all of the same mindset in a number of these things. And some of us were, or some were more, I would say, Christian-oriented than Hebrew-oriented. And so it became quite apparent that there was a difference in understanding in some of these key points. And I think a lot of it is because of the definitions of some of the words. And like I said, the word grace kept coming up. And because I believe that the person that we were basically sparring back and forth with a little bit did not understand the Hebrew understanding of grace, they didn't understand the New Testament scriptures that they were trying to convey. So I want to talk about grace and sort of help us get a little bit different view of this than what we may have had in the past. The word grace appears 170 times in the King James Bible. That's quite a bit. 170 times, and over 75% of those times it appears in the New Testament. And so if you've got a concept and it appears 75% of the time in the New Testament, people are more inclined to get their view of what the word means from the New Testament scriptures, and I can understand that. Unfortunately, though, for them, is that the word grace in its Hebrew form appears 147 times in the Tanakh. So really, the Hebrew version of that word appears much more than does the English version of it. And so when we get to really looking at it, we find out that the word grace, or the concept of grace, is actually more of a Old Testament concept than it is a New Testament concept. And we all understand that because we know that many of the things that are understood about grace are not correctly understood because they don't understand the whole concept of Torah. So today in this study, what we're going to do is we're going to go through and study the Hebrew counterpart of the word grace. And we'll look at a number of the scriptures here to where we can try to determine what it means. And then next time, hopefully next week, I'm going to go into the New Testament portion of it and try to look at some verses that I think are misunderstood because they don't understand the real meaning of the word grace. Now, one of the things that the understanding of grace in the New Testament, I'm going to get a little bit ahead of the story here just for a moment, but one of the things that we need to realize in order to understand grace in the New Testament is understand the covenant relationship of the people who are under grace in the New Testament. And what I'm talking about is that the grace that we see in the New Testament is often extended toward the tribes of Israel. And that is lost in the translation because the people don't understand the culture. And the reason I'm interjecting this right now is because it is just so important to understand the culture of the first century. If we don't understand that, it's going to be very difficult to understand what all of these things are being, what all these passages and all these words and all these concepts are if you don't know the background of why the people are saying it. So just for those, and I don't think there's really anyone here that doesn't understand it, I am very much two house. And I believe that if we don't understand two house and really clearly understand it, that we're going to miss a lot of these concepts as we go through them. Not just today, but but as we go down the road. So that's just a little sidebar here. The word grace in the New Testament, we're going to lay out what the New Testament, what people generally understand about the word grace in the New Testament in order to see how it contrasts with what we come up in the Old Testament. So in the New Testament, the Greek word grace, or the Hebrew, English word grace, comes from the Greek word charis, and spelled that way right there. You can see it up there. But if you were to go to Strong's, and this is right out of Strong's Concordance, this is the way Strong's defines it. Now, read that. I mean, look at it. It says, grace is graciousness as gratifying of manner or act, abstract or concrete, literal, figurative, or spiritual, especially the divine influence on the heart and its reflection in the life, including gratitude, acceptable benefit, favor, greed, or gift, grace, joy, liberty, liberality, pleasure, and thanks. Okay, after reading that, do you know what grace is? Okay. Well, you know, Strong's is not a really good really good dictionary. And even to get the Greek understanding of a lot of words, it's good to go to a good Greek dictionary. But this is the dictionary that most people use. I mean, Strong's is the standard, right? So this is what everyone uses. And so this is how people come up with this concept of grace. And as you can see, it's very abstract. There's nothing really concrete that you can sink your teeth into to really get an understanding of what grace really means. What is divine influence on the heart? Is that God moving in a person to do something? You know, what is this understanding of God, of divine influence? Many writers try to use this definition, divine influence on the heart, but they almost always come up with a more abstract thought. And I'm going to give you a couple of definitions here that we see in a couple of websites I pulled up. And you'll recognize one of these websites. This is how this one website defines this. It's, in the scriptures, God's forgiveness is often directly associated with the word grace, which refers to undeserved favor that we receive from God. Grace is also closely related to the word gift. It usually refers to an unearned gift or favor, such as God's gifts of forgiveness and eternal life. All right. The one who wrote this, he says it's very closely related to gift, and it is. Actually, it's the very next word in Strong's. It's the word charisma. And he's right about that. And you can sort of agree with this. I somewhat agree with this definition in the very broad sense. But this is not what the Bible really, I believe, teaches about what this word is. Now, there's another website I went to, and in there they got an article called Defining Grace. So I figured, well, this guy, he knows it. He's going to give us a definition. And so this is what Defining Grace says. Now, this is not their definition. This is their commentary on grace. And it says, divine influence is the effect of God's dealings with mankind. His influence concerning grace is favorable, and when responded to in obedience, it results in the heart becoming delightfully calm and happy, pleasurable, cheerful, and well off, even when the circumstances remain unchanged. In contrast, when God's influence in His judgment for sin, is His judgment for sin, we would not describe it as a favorable regard. Okay, y'all ready to explain that? Okay, I couldn't really understand it either, but what it seems to me is what he's saying is that divine influence on the heart could be either bad or good. So grace could be good or grace could be bad. That's the way I sort of gather that he's saying there, what he's saying there. But this guy goes on to define what grace is. He says, grace equals the divine influence upon the heart, the manner or act of favorable regard resulting in the heart becoming delightfully calm and happy, pleasurable, cheerful, and well off. All right, well, I feel good about that. So, and I hope you guys do too. I mean, do you understand what he's saying there?
Actually, I do. And the other part of it also makes sense, that when God's influence on your conscience is that you have sinned, then it's not that good. But that divine influence is not this grace, because it hasn't produced this. But the other one, if your conscience convicts you, in other words, God has had an influence in your heart, and it's because of sin, that you don't have this comp, but I didn't.
Okay.
The other part, the other one, the way I understood it was he was, just, I immediately thought of where we're told to be content and whatever we find ourselves. If that guy is saying that grace is something that if you're influenced, then you will be, when you say negatively or positively, like you said, you'll be content. So, I mean, I didn't know that he was just defining the word grace.
Yeah. He was commenting on it, yeah. Yeah.
That's how I saw that.
Well, there again, like I said on that first one, I sort of partially agree with that as an extended version.
Yeah.
But we'll go on to see what else there is to say here about it. The question I have about this definition, or any of these definitions that use the term divine influence on the heart, it leaves this question unanswered. Number one, and I'll just give you an example. Moshe was told by God to go to Pharaoh to say something. So it was I would say that's the divine influence on Moshe's heart to go tell Pharaoh something. But it also says that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. I would say that's a divine influence on Pharaoh's heart. Would that not be correct? Okay, so, and you have two, though, opposite things happening there. The divine influence on Moshe's heart led to the children of Israel being released. The divine influence on Pharaoh's heart led to him being killed. So it leaves you wondering then what actually grace would be in those particular cases. And then there's the question of how the word grace actually fits into this verse here. For by grace are you saved through faith. Is the divine influence on the heart? Is it the divine influence on the heart that saves you? Is it the faith that saves you? What specifically is James trying to say here when he makes this verse out if we don't really understand what grace is? Because it would seem to think that it's faith. And what does James say about faith? Faith without works is dead. But this verse is used overwhelmingly for the purpose of telling people that there are no works required for salvation. So it sort of leaves us in a dilemma here. Well, I believe that we can come up with a better understanding by going to the Old Testament, because it's out of the Old Testament that people like James, Peter, Yeshua came up with their definitions of these words and how. And so they would use these words based on the definitions that came out of the Tanakh. Would that not stand to reason? Because there was no New Testament at the time of these writings. We can all agree on that. So let's look at what the Hebrew word grace actually means. The Hebrew word grace the word grace comes from the Hebrew word ken. And it's Strong's number 2580. And it's a het and a nun. Very simple word. It's a het and a nun. We know from our Hebrew word picture studies that we did here years ago that a het means a fence, right? And a nun is a fish. And because fish lay thousands of eggs and produce lots of life, then the word, or the Hebrew letter nun, also means life. So, according to Brad Scott, What this means is a protector of life. That grace actually means a protector of life. And the word hen is also very closely related to the word kana, kana. And a kana is equal to a tent or an encampment. The word kana means tent or encampment. Now, if you go out in the wilderness and you set up a tent, why did you set up that tent?
Protection.
For protection. Okay? So you're underneath the tent, and you get protection. It's the protection of life comes from being under the tent. Also, if you are going to go camp out in an area where there's wild bears and wolves and all that stuff, and there's 10 of you going to go out and camp. Are one of you going to camp over here? Another one's going to camp a half mile off. Another one's going to camp another quarter mile that way. No, you're all going to camp together and an encampment, because being together provides safety, right? So you have protection by being in an encampment. And so this word, you can see, that's the only difference in it is it's got a female ending. It's got the hay in there that's making it a female ending. So Hana is basically a feminine term. So let's look and see where these words are used in the Tanakh, and I think we can get a little bit better understanding even more so of how this concept or this thought of protection of life is associated with the word hin. The first place this shows up is in Genesis 6, verses 7 and 8. And tell me if this doesn't change your way of thinking even on these verses. It says, "So Yahweh said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and birds of the air. For I am sorry that I have made them, but Noah found protection in the eyes of Yahweh." And so how was Noah protected? He was protected by being told to go out and build an ark. Okay. Now this is, I think, an interesting thought here. The protection didn't come through the divine influence of Moses' heart. The protection came because Moses did something. Noah did something.
Right. By his walk.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. He had to do something. Okay. If God had told him to do something he hadn't done and he didn't do it, then there would have been no protection. So Noah had to go out and do something in order to receive this grace, you might say, this protection that God had intended for him to have. So it wasn't divine influence on the heart that saved him. It was him actually doing something that saved him.
But wasn't it also the fact that he was walking?
Well, that
he was
comes
before this incident, before God singled him out.
Right. And I'm going to touch on that.
Okay.
I'm getting there. Okay. Okay, so this is one place. Another place we see protection associated with grace is in this episode here. And this is with Lot being taken out of Sodom. Genesis 19 says, "When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, 'Arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city.' And while he lingered," and I just underlined that because he lingered, "the men took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hands of his two daughters, and the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. Then Lot said to them, 'Please know, my lords,'" and I'm skipping some here, "'Please know, my lords, indeed now your servant has found grace or protection in your sight, and you have increased your mercy, which you have shown me by saving my life.'" So the protection that was given to Lot was that these angels, basically against his will, picked him up and took him outside and set him outside the city. And here we have the same word, being used there. Now, we'll get to favor here in a minute. But in this case, it looks to me like what we're seeing here is protection being given, which is considered grace in this particular point. Now, there's also a place where we see a connection with protection being a part of grace in Psalms. In Psalms 84, verse 11, it says, "And Yahweh's God is a sun and shield. Yahweh will give grace and glory. No good thing will be withheld from those who walk uprightly." Now, this verse here, it mentions Yahweh being a shield, and a shield is for protection. And so it looks like there's an association here between protection and the term grace. And as we go on, we're going to see this even more here, this concept spelled out. Also, there's a thought that the Torah itself is protection, and it's being described using the word ken again. "My son, let them," or the Torah, "not depart from your eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, so they will be life to your soul and grace or protection to your neck. Then you will walk safely in your way, and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. Yes, you will lie down and your sleep will be sweet. So here we see that the grace is sort of, it says grace around your neck, okay? It's like this is a way of protecting God's people. Of course, what it's talking about is that when you walk in Torah, then you've got this grace upon you, this protection upon you. And, you know, we know where our protection comes from. In fact, we'll get into that here in just a second. The idea that God is a protector of life is very prevalent throughout the Scripture. In almost every case where God talks about a protector of his people, those are people who are walking in the ways of God. So it's not that he's out there just protecting anybody. It's protecting those who are walking in his way. There's a number of passages. I'll just mention three of them here. One is 2 Samuel 22, verse 2. I don't have them up there. It says, Yahweh is my rock and my fortress. Psalm 91, verse 2 says, Yahweh is my refuge and my fortress. Isaiah 40, verse 10 says, the Lord God comes with might and his arm rules with him. All of these passages, and there's many, many, many more, that exemplify Israel's understanding of who God is and what God will do and can do for Israel. So, or do for his people when his people walk in his way. And this is it's somewhat of a broad spectrum of people that are covered under this. But most importantly, there are people who are walking in God's way or people who are called by God. We understand the concept, though, of grace meaning favored because we see it in our lives. And we're going to shift to this favored bit a little bit, or favored thought a little bit, because there's many verses in the Scripture where you see the word kin, it's translated favor. And there's a connection, though, between a person being favored and a person receiving grace. For example, there's a story in Genesis of Jacob being or coming back toward Canaan, leaving Laban, coming toward Canaan, and he's getting ready to face his brother Esau. And we all remember the story. We've read it a number of times. And in that case, Jacob he's scared. He doesn't know what's going to happen. And so he sends out all these animals and he puts them in sort of a rows. So, you know, Esau gets this one and then he comes out and there's more and then there's more and then there's more. And then Jacob also divided his family up into three groups, actually four groups. And here's Esau over here and here's Jacob right here. And then behind him, he puts the sons of the concubines and the concubines, Zilpah and Bilhah. And then behind that, he puts Leah. And then behind that, he puts Rachel. Well, why did he put Rachel in the very back? I give you 15 guesses and the first 14 don't count. He loved her, right? She was the one that he loved the most. And since he loved her the most, he favored her, and therefore he wanted to protect her. Now, we're the same way today. There's nothing's changed. We're the same way. If we have children and we know that our children are getting ready to do something that would cause them harm, and I'm not talking basically physical harm, like if we know if they're going to go to school or something and the school that they're going to go to is going to brainwash them or something, we're going to be inclined to encourage them not to do that. Whereas if it's our neighbor down the street and we know they're going to the same school, we probably wouldn't say anything. Why is that? Because we favor our children, don't we? We want to protect our children more so than those who are not our children. And so the concept of favor and protection can be synonymous. I mean, they go together under this term grace. But I don't think you can necessarily separate them. It's hard to separate those two terms. So with that, God favors those who he loves, those who please him, and those who he joins into covenant with. And those that love him, right, right. Those people who are, and you show your love by walking in the ways, you know, that's what John says, you show your love by walking, by keeping his commandments. So God favors those and he gives grace to those who he loves and who love him by walking in his way of life. We have a number of examples of this. Abraham was a man who followed God. He was in Babylon. He was called out of Babylon. And he did it simply because he was told to do so. No great miracle or anything was involved. I mean, there's no visions or anything. He just said, God told him to leave. Go to the land that I'm going to show you. And that's what he did. When Abraham was in the land of Canaan, he was met by the angels of God, and he asked him to stop and spend the afternoon with him. And it says in Genesis 18:3, and Abraham said, O Lord, if I have found favor, which is grace, and the Hebrew word kin, in your sight, do not pass by your servant. So here's Abraham telling God to simply, you know, would you please just stop here? If you favor me, then please stop here. And so what did he do? God stopped and he had dinner with him. And as a result of that, we know then that God favored Abraham. But why did God favor Abraham? Because Abraham followed God. He did what was right. He walked with God. He had faith in God, and so God favored him. Same thing with Lot, basically. I mean, Lot was a man, he doesn't look like he's a real righteous guy from just reading the Genesis account, but the epistles tell us that he was a righteous man. So that's the reason why God reached in there and pulled him and his family out of Sodom. Another episode of grace we see here is in the case of Ruth. Here she is gleaning the fields, and Boaz has taken notice of her, and she says, then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to Boaz, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? Well, the reason why Boaz took notice of her and found favor with her is because she was a woman of high regard. She had a reputation. She was the Moabitess who was taking care of Naomi. And she was willing to give up the Moabite religion, the whole thing, and become an Israelite and fully accept the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as her God. And this impressed many of the people in the area. And they knew that she was a special woman because of what she did as far as her you could say, religion, but also because of what she did in taking care of her mother-in-law. So notice was taken of her, and favor was found in her because she was doing the right thing. We have one other case I want to bring up, though I don't have the passage for it, but it's the case of Hannah. The word Hannah is the word grace. It's actually the same word, same Hebrew letters as the word tent. And we know the story of Hannah. Hannah was a woman who obviously was from a family that was, or a part of a family that was walking in God's way. Her husband Elkanah or whatever it was, he was a man who he made this pilgrimage to Jerusalem or to Shiloh at that time to keep the festivals, and he obviously was walking in God's way. The interesting thing about Hannah is that, as we know in the story, she prayed for a child after going back from Shiloh back to her home in Ephraim. Her and her husband got together. They conceived a baby, and she gave the baby to God in his service. When she delivered Samuel up to Eli in Shiloh and turned him over to Eli, she gave a prayer. And I don't know if you've ever read the prayer, but the prayer is really quite interesting, because the prayer is all about the strength and protection of God. So there's this connection here in all this, with this term, I mean, these Hebrew letters here, and the meaning of it all. So, to summarize basically what we've talked about today, grace comes from the English word grace is the word kin in Hebrew. It's a het and a nun, and we know that those together make the word or mean protection of life, and it's there again, it's really closely related to the word tent, which is there to protect. So it's protection of life and favor. But the favor, I believe we can establish, is connected to walking in the ways of God, and it's also connected to a protection or a desire to protect the people that you favor. So anyway, that's that. Next time when we do this, what I want to do then is go into the New Testament and look at some of those passages that use the word grace and just replace in there, instead of grace, replace that with protection and with the understanding of who God says will be under grace. And we basically see that defined in the Tanakh, because if we understand that God's giving protection to his people, then that, it, by definition, then is grace.